This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, the economic fears of Malaysia's youth.
So this comes as a new study finds that almost 60% of young people in Malaysia worry that they will never be able to buy a home. First, we look into the findings of the survey and what the pain points are, and then what policies do we need to address these issues?
Tell us, what are the main challenges with buying your first home? And is owning a home still important to you? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is just coming up to 6:08, and let's start with that study we referenced, right? It was conducted by Architects of Diversity, and the thing that's coming up most often is the fact that 59% of youth in Malaysia fear that they will never be able to afford a home. Now, this was from speaking to 3,089 respondents aged between 18 to 30, and essentially led to a lot of information on what more they'd like to see done, what efforts they want to see from the government in order to help them essentially move forward.
So this is a tough one, right? Because that's quite a sobering number. It's almost 60% of people saying that I just worry that this is something that will never, I will never be able to do. And in fact, I would go so far as to say that I think it matches up with a lot of the worries of younger people around the world, because this idea of home ownership being out of reach is a recurring one. This idea of being very far away from where your parents were at your exact same age is something that we see coming up across cultures, across countries. And if we look at the people who ran the survey, Architects of Diversity, so Jason Wee, who is the co-founder of Architects of Diversity and who is also going to be our guest shortly, pointed out that the pandemic has actually worsened economic anxiety among Malaysia's young. 52% are worried about future unemployment. And of this, actually, East Malaysians made up 58% of the respondents, indicating that it's a larger concern there. 88% are asking for employment protection of sectors like gig workers and so on. And circling back to housing, 90% want the government to develop more affordable housing. 75% feel that there should be a ceiling price on rent. So there are a lot of very clear-cut, this isn't just bread and butter concerns, right? I would say that this is Maslow's pyramid concerns, because we're talking about the basics. We're talking about shelter. We're talking about food.
And Jason Wee has actually linked these concerns to a larger, not just policies that need to be implemented, but rather that this would actually be a valuable platform for politicians to run on and to think about, because he basically said that political parties and policymakers would actually be able to gain more youth support if they focused on things like economic empowerment. If we look at the existing policies that do exist, in terms of existing policies that do exist, yes, if we look at existing policies, we've heard of some of them, right? So there are things like Perumahan Rakyat One Malaysia, or PRIMA, which is of course aimed at developing and providing affordable and high quality homes for middle income Malaysians, and this is only available as your first or second home. There's also the My First Home scheme, or the scheme Rumah Pertamaku, for first time home buyers, and this gives them up to 110% financing from participating banks. But clearly these are not necessarily meeting the gaps, or it's not doing enough. And so all of those things you mentioned earlier, the suggestions that people would like to see, I think the question is really why more attention is not being paid to these concerns. And instead, I think we often hear the kind of rhetoric that we're quite used to, right? Young people don't know how to save money. Young people are, you know, make poor choices. And that often sits very uncomfortably for me.
Yes, I agree with that. I also think that the weight of purchasing a house is an important thing to talk about as well, because if you have concerns about future unemployment, for instance, then even if you are employed now, do you feel confident about entering into what is essentially a 20, 30, 50 year arrangement, you know, where you are going to be bearing this loan? And so I think that it's important to consider not just, oh, you know, why can't you earn money? And flip that around to, that's right, why can't you earn money? You know, what is going on in the larger economic setup that is making this such an intimidating or problematic factor in terms of, can I buy a home? Can I afford this? Will I be able to plan financially for my future?
We're talking about this, well, on the back of a survey by Architects of Diversity that discovered that nearly 60% of Malaysian young people fear that they'll never be able to own a home. So we'd like to hear from you. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? And is owning a home still important to you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking to Jason Wee of Architects of Diversity Malaysia. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It is just coming up to 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are focusing on the economic concerns of Malaysia's young people. This comes from a survey that highlighted, among other things, their real fears about owning homes and the affordability in being able to do so. We'd like to hear from you. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? Is owning a home still important to you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia. Jason, welcome to the show.
All right. Thanks for having me on again.
So let's start by walking us through that survey that you guys did, right? It sort of circled the major economic worries that young people have at the moment. What were some of the findings?
Right. So maybe let me introduce the survey. So the survey was called the Youth Aspiration Manifesto Survey, which is part of our larger project to empower youth voices. Now, in our first release of the survey, we kind of found three big trends. The first one, I think, is quite simple, as you mentioned, is that youth are worried. 59% of the youth surveyed feared that they weren't able to own a home in the future, and 52% fear that they're not be able to find employment in the future as well. So those are, you know, not surprising per se, but I think it kind of gives a number to the kinds of worries that are present out there. The second thing is that many policies that are currently in discussion by lawmakers that support cost of living, so things like ceiling price on rent, vacancy taxes, which would bring, you know, maybe bring property prices down, those things were well received. 90%, for example, past policies, 90% of the youth we surveyed supported affordable home development. So in other words, from a mampu milih. And since this survey was done before the increase of the minimum wage, 87% of the youth we surveyed supported that increase of minimum wage from 1,200 ringgit. Now, there were also wide, you know, support for things like ceiling price on rent, vacancy tax, as well as employment protection for gig workers, of which youth constitute a large portion of them.
So you mentioned that this is part of a larger initiative to empower youth voices, right? And therefore, the survey focuses really on the distress and the concerns experienced by younger people. In doing the survey, why was it important to make this particular distinction?
Right. I mean, part of it is because COVID has impacted different groups quite differently in Malaysia. And we know this as well. And youth is a, you know, broad and diverse category. So it's not, you know, not fair to label one and all. But we know that on average that youth are particularly vulnerable in present time. And that with more and more elections coming up, and as policymakers are making promises to the electorate, it's also important to make sure that youth are not grouped into the larger subset. One, because youth have simply less assets to fall back on. In moments of economic downturn, youth have less cash to pull out from their bank account, as we simply have seen in the past 2 years. The second one is that youth are largely engaged greatly in informal or gig work, and that they constitute a huge amount. And so there have been kind of, you know, dragging feet on ensuring better policies are made around gig workers, right? So there have been mulling laws in the past, but even these laws have, you know, really maybe have it's mentioned once in 6 months and not really touched on again. And it's been really slow. And the third thing is because what we do now will critically affect the shape, the generational behavior in times to come. So how the government reacts to youth at present day and our current livelihood, that will largely impact how we spend, how we save in the future as well. So all these things are quite important to look at, not just as a larger group, but specifically at the, you know, 18 to 30 age range at the present.
You touched on this briefly earlier. We know that economic anxiety is a pre-existing issue. How has the pandemic amplified these concerns?
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely pre-COVID, right? In my opinion, the anxiety, the chronic anxiety came about, you know, I think the kind of way to frame it is what I'm doing enough to prepare me for the future? Is it enough? Is what I'm studying, is what I'm upskilling myself enough to prepare me for the changes that there is to come? And I think when COVID came, it completely, you know, overturned so many assumptions we had about security and the economy. So yes, you know, it's very much similar, but I think, you know, as a young person myself, I'm 25 this year, I have no idea what's going to come in the future, right? And that gives me incredible anxiety. And so I think the question then comes to why we did the survey is because with the kinds of instability and, you know, uncertainties that come across this globalized economy and globalized world, what are the kinds of social safety nets our governments providing for you? And that's what can alleviate anxiety and perhaps create, give greater, you know, quality of living for you who are inevitably going to be affected by, you know, economic catastrophes that happen throughout the world.
So we've talked a little bit about gig work, but one of the things that came up a lot was really unemployment as a concern. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so it's crucial to note that, you know, we asked the question about the fear of finding employment in the future. So it's not necessarily now, but the general moment of at the present where you are not, you know, certain about your employment in the future. So this is quite interesting, is because 52%, you know, strongly agreed that they were fearful, right? While 23% disagreed, while 24% were neutral. I think something interesting to highlight here is that this concern of not being able to find employment in the future was felt more strongly among Bumiputra respondents, as well as East Malaysian respondents. For example, in the case where unemployment, only 17% of youth in the central region express, you know, a fear, but up to 30% of, you know, East Malaysians express strong fear for unemployment. So I think it's, you know, it's not a surprise, but I think the question that we need to really come about is, you know, is this real and imagined? Or imagine, and what's the source of this form of unemployment, right? A fear of unemployment. Is it structural, where we're simply having a mismatch in skill sets? And I can talk a bit about that with the education section of the survey we did. Or is it simply the availability of jobs, and where is the economy and capital flowing into? I mean, it's no surprise that East Malaysians are particularly fearful if development is primarily focused within the Klang Valley.
If we could expand on that, these fears that were the strongest among East Malaysians, why is that so? Why is the sentiment stronger? What are the specific challenges that they face?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that when we survey these youth, right, it's where they're at currently. So even though you're East Malaysian living in Klang Valley, you are, you know, counted as living in Klang Valley in that case. And so with, you know, the changes in industry, right, where a lot of the global economy is moving to service industries or highly skilled industries where it's largely concentrated in capital cities. And it's no surprise then that where in you know, states that focus on manufacturing or focus on primary resources, those anxieties are bound to increase. And especially with trends of like ESG or even just, you know, constantly changing abilities for companies to adapt to the, you know, global world, that creates a lot of fear that one day my job in the factory or in a industry located outside the city is gone, and there is not much available for me in this particular geography, and I would one day maybe have to move to the city. And for and we've seen through the 2020 census that the population in Klang Valley has increased astronomically, right? That where people are packing in into KL. And so what does this mean? It's not only and anxiety for people living outside of Klang Valley, but it's also creating anxiety for people living in Klang Valley. And exactly the discussion of housing, where at the same time, you know, there's so much supply and there's so much demand, but there's a huge mismatch, both in terms of capacity and availability in the market.
So let's talk a little bit more about that anxiety, right? Because it's a word that's come up a number of times now. How does all of this, you know, this question of having a home, not having a job, how does it impact mental well-being when there is this pervasive sense of anxiety about, well, the present, but also the future?
Yeah, most definitely. So I think one, you know, just on a basic personal level, it hurts your ability to plan and strategize for your future, right? So as an individual that cannot see long-term and it's overrun by this form of anxiety, that damages our capacity to properly plan. But secondly, what worries me as, you know, a co-founder of an NGO that focuses on race and religion is that this anxiety can be capitalized by different forces at play, right? And that's oftentimes we know that populist forces come into power when anxiety is high. And so my worry is that if we allow this anxiety to run through, not only will it bleed into our economy, but it will also bleed into how our politics, the kind of narratives our politics uses, is being exacerbated or is being more widespread. So not necessarily the fact that responding to these anxieties are bad, but are our politicians responding to these anxieties in productive manners rather than just saying, I will fight for you, I'll improve the economy, which maybe we have seen before, but are they responding with better policies that actually tackle these anxieties in a effective and productive manner?
So we referenced this at the start of the interview. Another main worry that's come up in the survey is that they'd never be able to afford a home. Why is this important to highlight?
Yeah, this is important to highlight because, you know, it's been all over the news, right? One, obviously, the Residential Tenancy Act that's been being floated around by the Ministry of Housing has created a lot of conversation that more youth are renting rather than trying to buy houses. The second thing, there's a lot of news about uninhabited properties in especially the Klang Valley, where a lot of people are not purchasing or people have purchased them for investments and have not been occupied. I think here it's important to note that various housing schemes exist, right? And many of them are popular, especially the Rumah Mampu Milik Selangor, for example. But obviously there's a diversity in terms of the quality as well as location, of which many before me have come in and criticized that perhaps maybe these homes are cheap, but because they're so far away, you're going to increase your cost of travel anyway. One thing to note, I think, about housing is that it's kind of like a catch-21, right? Where you need to have a job to buy a house, but then to maintain a house, you also need a job in that case. And so a lot of research before has linked whether you want to own a home with job security, right? So that's quite simply true. How are you going to purchase confidently if there is not a sense of job security where you're going to be able to repay your loan in the years to come? And I think, you know, someone who's also, you know, renting at the moment and looking at properties, the thought is incredibly terrifying, right? And so whether or not it's meaningful to youth, it's a separate question. But I think whether youth are able to engage and have properties that are simply affordable or those options plausible for them is quite important to make sure that they are able to establish that sense of financial independence, but also just an investment for themselves as well.
We unfortunately, you know, need to kind of start getting down to brass tacks. And we are going to be looking at this in more detail. You mentioned some initiatives that tackle things like home ownership. I guess the question is, what other initiatives are there to tackle things like employment? And also, are they working?
That's a tricky one, right? I think, you know, unemployment has been the biggest conversation in the past decade. And obviously, we can approach it multiple ways, and I'm not going to list them. But I think the biggest one is part to do with education, which our survey does cover a bit. One something interesting thing is that, you know, non-Bumiputras, i.e. Chinese and Indian respondents, were a lot more disagreeable with the idea that they are not able to find employment in the future. And this was interesting because we also find similar kind of racial trends with when we asked about language instruction in schools. How are we spending enough time in both BM and English? That was also largely racially divided, where non-Bumiputras felt that, you know, we were spending enough time for BM versus where non-Bumiputras felt that we weren't spending enough time on English, for example, right? And, you know, after our release of the survey yesterday, I went to, you know, Malaysia Kini and saw the news, and it's a lot to do with language as well. I think obviously there are many ways of it, but I think one way is to think about this is, are we equipping our youth with education that is appropriately, you know, guarding them for the future? And it really bleeds into the language debate. And I think that's something that, you know, people are mentioning in the comments, but hasn't been systematically studied at the same time. So as the, you know, Malaysian government is enacting new policies to do with Bahasa Malaysia, such as, you know, when politicians go abroad, they are to use BM as the main language of, as a main vernacular. When we do all these things, I completely sympathize with the symbolic need to maintain, you know, the supremacy of Bahasa Malaysia as our national language. But at the same time, how are these policies going to impact the sustainability of youth who should perhaps be, you know, multilingual to better approach a more globalized and changing world.
Jason, we just have about a minute left. What do you hope to see happening in the future in regard to economic development for the youth?
I really hope our politicians and policymakers stop with the fluff and really respond and move things fast, because a lot of policies that we are in discussion are very important and very crucial, but there seems to be a delay over it. And what we need is urgency, and what we need is movement and a reassurance that policymakers are really taking these policies into consideration rather than just making them of use as talking points.
Jason, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks very much.
That was Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia, weighing in on the economic worries of young people here in Malaysia. After this, we'll be looking at the kinds of policies we need to address these. But we'd like to hear from you. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? Is owning a home still important to you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Charmila and Lynn. And today we are talking about the economic worries of young people in Malaysia. A number of things have come up in a survey that was conducted by the Architects of Diversity Malaysia. Among them, worries about never being able to own a home. And so we've been asking you for your thoughts. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? Is owning a home still important to you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to get into the sort of policy changes that are required to address these worries very shortly with our guest. But I thought we could read this message from Ming Shen, because it really does cover some interesting areas.
It does. So Ming Shen says, there is a way to revitalize the city centre with more youths. There are so many empty shop lots that can be revitalized as co-living spaces for the young working population. You don't need to own a car if you live in the city. It is just simple logic to make use of wasted and empty spaces in KL for accommodation. This will help youths get on their feet before owning their own home. And I mean, the issue of wasted shops or homes in the city centre is actually one that comes up very, very often. And I think this is such a good idea. I would also extend it to talking about the homeless population, which I know is a separate issue. But the premise of the proximity being a factor, you know, you would be close to public transport, you would be close presumably to places of work. All of these things are very important.
And yet when we look at city planning and typical development planning, it's almost the opposite that happens, right? City centre areas are instead reserved for unaffordable developments that are pretty much out of reach for many young people, or conversely, low-cost housing that isn't ideal, that, and you know, all the issues that come up, not comfortable to live in, not really long-term housing, and instead of focusing on actually resolving the problem.
Well, yes, and also, unfortunately, even as we're talking about these spaces currently being wasted and empty, they are still in prime locations. And mm-hmm. that is the problem as well. You know, we do need to, I guess, acknowledge that truth, that even as now they're being wasted, that doesn't mean that when people look at them, they don't see money. And that is probably, you know, a huge part of the issue.
Keep those thoughts coming. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? And do you have suggestions for how we can help the young people of Malaysia own their first home? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Associate Professor Dr. Hafiz Ali Iqbal Hussain, Head of Research at the Faculty of Business and Law at Taylor's University. Dr. Hafiz Ali, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
So we hear a lot about how this current generation of young people face very specific challenges when it comes to economic stability. What are some of the main issues that come into play here?
I think before we can start to understand the issues, it's important to understand what is economic stability. Yeah? So basically, it means when you have a period of good or constant growth, and growth is meaningless if you have high inflation. So that would have to come or would be coupled with low levels of inflation. Now, the advantages of having a stable economy, we would have increased productivity, would have improved efficiency as well as low unemployment. I think the unemployment issue right now is one that most people are concerned about, and countries normally experience this sort of situation of instability because they enter into recessions. And in the Malaysian context, we're just coming out of we're just shifting away from the pandemic stage, and we had a sharp recession in 2020. So these are among the issues that are playing or at play at the moment, yeah?
For the purposes of our show, we've been referencing a study by Architects of Diversity Malaysia, which found that 59% of young people in Malaysia fear that they will never be able to afford a home. Do you think this fear is in fact more prevalent in this current generation compared to previous?
I think to a large extent, what we've seen over the past decade, there's been an increase in housing prices in Malaysia that has been accelerating at a rate which is greater than the rise in income level. So what we're seeing is the median house price is today beyond the reach of an average Malaysian earning a median income. Yeah. So this is going to be or has become an issue because of the distribution of new housing supply. And this has been concentrated in categories where they're very highly priced, and the affordable housing segment has been severely facing an undersupply. Yeah? So there's some sort of a mismatch. There are houses being built, but they're built at the higher end of pricing in terms of concentration, and the lower end of pricing has seen an undersupply. Yeah? And this creates a problem of affordable homes, and it's becoming a challenge. But this case is not exclusive to Malaysia. It's a challenge for policymakers on a worldwide scope. Yeah.
So if we then look at existing policies that aim to help young people purchase their first home, what are some of these policies and have they been successful?
We've seen quite a number of policies that have been put forth. You've got your fund for affordable homes. We've seen the introduction of lower rates, extended repayment periods, and we've got micro homes for people who or single Malaysians who would want to rent. And these rents are relatively cheap compared to market rates. And we've also seen exemption of stamp duties for first-time buyers. We've seen the home ownership campaigns. You get a decent discount of 10%. And all of these multiple programs have been involving the private sector, federal government, and state governments. But now the problem is that the current level of house building is insufficient to meet the demand at a particular segment of pricing. Yeah. So, and if this trend continues, we're seeing a population growth, we're seeing urbanization, and the income growth hasn't kept up with the pricing or price increases in the housing sector, what we're going to see is a mismatch in terms of supply and demand. And this trend also is compounded by the fact that although we have a growing population, the increase of households has been greater than the increase in population. This shows that the average household is shrinking. Yeah, so which means that we're going to have a very strong demand going forward, especially in the affordable housing segment. Yeah.
I wanted to pick up on that because a part of this, I mean, when we're talking about the market, right, it's not all determined by the government. We're not talking about affordable housing that is necessarily being provided in a public sense, right? In many senses, we're also talking about private initiatives, private developers. So is there any possibility then of balancing out or evening out this kind of mismatch in supply and demand?
Well, I think the issue will now become about increasing supply because in a particular price segment and reducing the cost of affordable housing itself. And this can be done through industrial building, which tends to deliver affordable housing faster, putting it out in the market. And you can also rely on smart procurement. Yeah, that's among the things. We can also see that the rental market in Malaysia needs to be further looked at. At the moment, less than, I think, about a quarter of Malaysians are renting. Majority of them prefer to own a house. Then that creates another issue in the mismatch. Yeah? What we need to do is we need to strengthen the rental market by creating or focusing legislations which will then safeguard the interest of tenants and landlords. Yeah.
How can the existing policies be improved? What would you like to see them address?
Well, I think I would like to see the establishment of a central repository. This is to create a more systematic approach of monitoring and managing the demand and supply. And from there, we can then start capturing scale efficiency. Yeah? And we're going to see a demand being tailored to specific shifts in demographics and trends which come out. Yeah, what we're going to see is a more dynamic market that is very focused and tailored to the needs of how the trend of households are changing. Yeah? And not only that, I think the sources of financing for affordable homes also need to be diversified. Yeah, we need to start exploring more innovative schemes for providing financing of these affordable homes. Yeah.
We'll continue our conversation after this with Associate Professor Dr. Hafiz Ali Iqbal Hussain, Head of Research at the Faculty of Business and Law at Taylor's University. We're discussing policy changes that we need to address economic worries of Malaysia's young people. We'd like to hear from you. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:50. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're continuing our conversation on economic worries faced by young people here. And we'd like to hear from you. What are the main challenges with buying your first home? Is owning a home still important to you? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're continuing our conversation with Associate Professor Dr. Hafiz Ali Iqbal Hussain, Head of Research at the Faculty of Business and Law at Taylor's University. Dr. Hafiz Ali, so recently the PM announced that the minimum wage will be increased to 1,500 ringgit starting next month. So will this ease the financial burden that many young people are facing, especially when it comes to assets that require loans?
I think this is a very good point. The need to implement minimum wage in the first place is based on the need to provide protection to people or workers at the lowest income strata. Yeah? And these are often marginalized in society, such as youth workers. And the reason this happens is because they don't have or there's an unequal level of bargaining power, yeah, for them to demand higher wages. Yeah. So over here, it calls for a direct intervention from the government. And while there has been some thought that says that increasing minimum wage may not be the best thing to do, most of the evidence points that the increase will likely bring many people out of poverty, benefit those who are in the bottom half of the income stratas, and this will be very beneficial to those who are making more than the minimum wage as well, yeah, because their total income levels will also go up. Yeah, so I think, yes, in that sense, it's going to be a very positive move in that direction.
If we look at the current unemployment rate for the under 30 age group, right, it stands at about 8.3%. How does this compare with the national average?
Well, the figures coming in for the first couple of months of 2022 point towards roughly about 4% on the national average, and that the youth unemployment is roughly about double, yeah, slightly just above double. And what we can see is this is pointing towards a mismatch in this particular segment, yeah, where you have, especially among the younger graduates, and as they enter the workforce, there seems to be some sort of mismatch. And it's a issue between friction between demand and supply. Yeah?
If you could expand on that, what is contributing to the unemployment rate in this particular age group?
I think the unemployment in this particular age group is coming about because of the nature of the economy. You have structural unemployment, which has been there for quite some time. And as this new labor enters the market, such as youths, This is going to create extra supply, and especially those who come in with highly skilled qualifications, they're going to be looking for skilled jobs. And when you don't have that many skilled jobs or professional jobs, and what is going to happen is these people are going to start taking up semi-skilled and low skilled jobs, yeah? And this will displace people with lower skills, yeah? And what we can see is that in recent times, more semi-skilled and low-skilled jobs are being created, yeah? Well, because of the demands of meeting their daily expenses and so on, and the need to be employed, what we're going to see, or what we're seeing, is fresh graduates are taking up less skilled jobs, yeah? And we can trace this back to lack of the investment coming in towards improving the sophistication of businesses and innovation, which now creates a lower incentive for knowledge gains or technological advancements that you would want to see at the higher end, yeah? So what will happen is, over the long run, these skilled graduates are going to be displaced, and they're going to, what we're seeing here is basically a structural issue coming about from the lack of creation of high-skilled jobs. Yeah.
So in closing then, when we move forward, what other policies should the government put in place to help raise the economic potential, really, of young Malaysians?
I think what we're going to need here is to resolve these issues, we're going to need long-term structural reforms, especially in the labour market. And this has to be based on a framework which promotes a holistic ecosystem. It should be aimed at providing or creating high-skilled jobs. And this can be done via spurring quality investments, and these can be incentivized. And it has to be investments which create high-value jobs, yeah? And they should lead to increased complexity in the economy, yeah? So what we're going to need is a plan to shift away from low-cost productions, a model which is focused on high-skilled and increased demand for such jobs, yeah? So what we're going to need is shift away from low-cost workers, yeah? A reliance on low-cost labour.
Dr. Hafiz Ali, thanks for speaking with us today.
Welcome.
That was Associate Professor Dr. Hafiz Ali Iqbal Hussain, Head of Research at the Faculty of Business and Law in Taylor's University, speaking to us about policy changes, structural changes that we need to have in place to address the economic worries of young people. Let us know, what are the main challenges with buying your first home? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. In fact, weigh in also on whether owning a home is still important to you as well. And we do have time for some messages.
Yes. So let's see. We have this from Arvin, who says, prices of houses in the Klang Valley are very speculative, and it sometimes doesn't make sense because it's caused by artificial demand. Some single individuals own more than two houses. This needs to be stopped. The housing sector should not be allowed for investors. Investors should go for commercial properties.
This is actually... I mean, it's an important point, right? And we often hear of developments that are in areas or intended at people for more affordable housing, and yet being bought over by, bought en masse and being used as an investment property rather than as a home. And I mean, I do think that there are policies or changes that can be made to prevent these in particular areas, but certainly not something that we're seeing enough of here, especially in high investment potential areas like Kuala Lumpur.
I also wanted to address this from Lua, who says, why are people so obsessed with owning a home? Shouldn't they pay more attention to having a quality life, which very often has no relation to owning said home? In fact, very often they're mutually exclusive. And I think that while I get totally where you're coming from, I do think that for people who are economically uncertain, the premise of owning a house has always been tied to certainty. This premise that no matter what, I have a house, I have money parked in this house, it's a good investment. And I think that that's what's driving that desire. And while that might not be how many of us feel, I don't think, I mean, I can totally see where if you have a lot of other uncertainties in your life, that appeal remains.
It's the simple fact that at least I have a place to live in, right?
Exactly.
Even if I may fall upon financial tough times. Keep those thoughts coming. What are some of the challenges you faced when you buy your first home? Is owning a home still important to you? Send them our way. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.